You are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hey.
It's Niall.
Yahoo.
And it's me, Brian, tonight's episode. JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Golden Wind, episode 34. The Requiem quietly plays. I wanted to say plays quietly. No, the Requiem quietly plays. Part one. In which everyone gets swapped over.
Yeah, Hirohiko Araki, known as horror fan to slap his person from horror films, goes for that body horror classic Freaky Friday.
And the best thing is they do it properly in that the actors get to play the other characters.
Not like, some are better than others, I'll give them that, like, yeah.
Not like blooming One Piece where the voice is swapped as well. I'm so looking forward to that as well.
Yes.
I don't know, I did kind of appreciate, like, the whole joke of Frankie making the faces through Chopper and just Robin being disgusted. that joke still landed when I saw that.
Yeah.
The mysterious new person looked even better this episode than they did at the end of the last episode. They've got, like, extra effects on the animation.
Yeah.
It's like it's not finished.
That's my last time a man has a stand. Or, I don't know, a stand who became a real boy. Just walking around, yes. Sodding brains.
Stand on the loose.
Because we learned what happened to the man by the end of the episode.
Yeah.
I think most of this is conversation, but the fact that everyone's body switched means it's really fun conversation for the most part.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. And a similar effect is happening all over the city as well. You see people like lying unconscious in the street and they wake up and they've swapped around. It's like, oh no, like the cop and robber in the police car swapped around and now the tables are turned.
And the other cop switched with a bird.
Yes. Like it's fucked up ones where the mother switched with her baby and it's like this woman is writhing on the ground wailing.
And the baby as the woman not being able to do anything about it.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
And so the switches we see initially.
I think this is a diagram on the commercial break. It's like, yes. we gathered, thanks.
Mr. and Trish and Giordio and Narancia.
Yeah.
And it's a question as to whether who has switched with our big cool dad who's currently dead.
Yes. The Trish and the Mr. thing is where they get the most comedy from.
I feel like Trish is kind of out of character in this because she's super girly, but I just think Mr.'s just so gross to be in.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my god, dude, you stink. Do you ever wash this weird fucking crop top jumper of yours? What the hell?
Yeah, well, it kind of makes sense. I'm just looking at who I not want to swap with. Like, yeah, probably Mr. because he's just keeps weird things in his pockets, like bits of ham for his stand.
That's true. I mean, like, we know specifically from this episode that the reason he sticks his gun down his pants is he rests it on his dick. Because when he sticks his gun down Trish's skirt, in Trish's body, he's kind of like, whoa, there's something missing. Like, his gun isn't resting on the resting point he has built for it. Dude, that's gross. Don't rest your gun on your dick.
And Trish and Mrs. Bison, what the fuck are you doing? Get away from my pants. He's like, no, man, try to scratch my balls, but they're not there anymore. It's weird.
Yeah, he's just that fucking gross. But, and she's really freaking out being stuck in that body.
Mm. Yeah.
I did like the reveal as well where, Trish seems to be acting like cool, flipping around a gun. And you're like, wait, what's going on here? And Narancia is acting like surprisingly calm.
Ooh, like father, like daughter. I just thought she's just stepping up.
Yeah.
I was just trying to figure out, okay, first of all, Bruno's over there, and if he's been so swapped as well, then that must mean that like there's somebody else around here that he can swap it. So who is this and who is in his body right now? Luckily, someone is here to explain everything. What the heck? Mr. President, you're talking to us. It's like, I'm not Mr. President. I'm Jean-Pierre Polnareff.
Mr. President's the stand. Coco Jumbo is the turtle.
Coco Jumbo's the turtle. Oh, Coco Jumbo has unfortunately passed in Polnareff's body.
Yes.
But Polnareff lives on as a talking turtle.
Yes.
there's some weirdness going on here. So, like, Polnareff, like, I assume it'll explain it more, but Polnareff Stand has gone on the fucking loose.
Yes.
As part of the double super arrow that was involved in it, as he explains. But he switched bodies with Coco Jumbo.
Mm-hmm.
And now he has Coco Jumbo Stand because, friggin', I was gonna say Narancia, friggin' Giorno in Narancia's body was still inside the key in Coco Jumbo. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing like he has Coco Jumbo's powers now by weirdness of stand switching and whatnot. Whereas everyone else does have their own stand.
Mm. Unless their stands. Their stands are now powered up.
Oh, yes. That's right. Yeah. They discovered this after, like, waking up. Everyone fell asleep for a few hours as well, which is just, like, adds to the weirdness. It's like, hey, how come everyone fell asleep?
Mm.
They're seeing the sunrise, and it's like, oh, this is not good.
Yeah. Parlis lays out that, yeah, one of these arrows are the key, besides giving people stands that can just, like, give other abilities to current stand users. Like, I was just in my little college in the country one day, trying to recuperate out of my legs chopped off, and I was messing around with the arrow. Then, one thing you know, it fell behind, down the back of the drawers between, like, the wall, and like, oh, it was just an awkward spot to get to.
I love how he's being, like, so serious, and it's like, oh, such a coincidence. Who could have happened to him? I was like, of course it happened to you, Polnareff, if you fucking goon. And
yeah.
It fell behind the dresser, and he's like, ah, bollocks, I can't fucking reach that. I'm in a wheelchair. Fucking Silver Chariot, would you fucking get that for me? it feels more like Polnareff now, because he's done something very stupid. Or at least used his stand in a very silly way. Yeah.
Also, it's like, I thought about leaving it there. Maybe go to the safest place.
It's like, fuck it. It's just behind some dresser. Fuck it.
This, like, you know, incredibly powerful ancient artifact. And I fell behind the drawers there. No one look behind there. I mean, no one cleans behind there anyway. So who would ever need to pull the drawers out? Unless you're moving house. Hang on, I think this is true.
Or get somebody to clean the place.
So Silver Chariot, like, sticks his hand, and I'm gonna get your arrow back, but he pricks his finger on a spinning wheel, falls asleep for 1,000 years. No, it's, he pricks his finger on it, and then starts doing all the weird morphe effects we saw him do earlier, and...
All the farmers and cows fell asleep in the field outside, and he was like, oh fuck, I better grab it off my stand before shit goes really bad.
Yeah. So I thought, this is some bad shit, and why should that not happen? But then, it happened. And here we are seeing the results of it.
Yeah, he was saying it's like my ace in the hole against Uran was to use it. Unfortunately, my body's dead right now. Also, he wouldn't have gotten as close to me had he not been a different person when he started coming up the stairs. That sort of caught me for a loop.
Yeah.
He explains it like he's a duo or something, I think it translates it as, is it?
It's saying that, like, he's two personalities, but also that means he has two souls in one body.
Yeah.
So, that means
to the point where you won't even recognize him in one body. Yeah.
So in all the swapping around, you could have Doppio's soul, but also the Avolo soul, like, in the mix as well. So who's what and where and how are they? A question which needs to be answered pretty quick, because there's somebody like running full pelt right towards the Colosseum right now, and it's some weird dude. He's wearing this kind of one long flowing pink hair, a mesh top. It's like, who? I've never seen this guy before, right? He's probably could be an enemy stand user, because who the hell would come here besides?
Who would dress like that besides an enemy stand user?
Yeah. I know, but, oh no, look, over there in the shadows, it's Silver Chariot Wrecking. I'm just gonna just jump by out there and fucking get him. Something happened now. He's coming close. Oh no, he's gonna pull out a stand. What I meant. Sticky finger, and he's punching Silver Chariot. Oh my gosh, it's alright. It's the boss. It's Bruno in the boss's body. It's gonna be alright. Or is it? But also, yeah, it's like, where's the boss's body? Where's the boss's spirit now?
Like, not a crazy amount happens in it, just a lot of explanations and whatnot, but there's a lot of fun leading up to it. And there's a lot of like, wait a minute, you ask like a lot of questions as to who's in what body, yeah.
Yeah, it's just super looking crazy as well. This is kind of what I was meaning. I had to sort of like one of these John Carpenter's apocalypse films in, because it's just when you're seeing the wider effects of this like phenomenon over the rest of the city, and has produced some really messed up results. Yeah, it's giving that kind of vibe, right? And that, and just with all the kind of goopy, like, flesh-dissolving creatures and such, maybe you think that Iraqi's probably watching a lot of John Carpenter around the time he was writing this.
Sure.
I saw a tweet saying, somebody saying, oh, the opening's in Italian, and it's not in Italian, there's just a break in the opening. I thought they were going to be doing a thing with the Requiem stand of, like, it had swapped the mind of whoever singing the song, so it was Italian, but no, it was, Diavolo shows up midway through the opening theme.
Yeah, we get to see, like, what happens during the cut when the blood drops, they kind of, the video jumps and there's more blood drops there. And we see what was happening within that space. All,
we're seeing the unedited opening, I guess, is the way to put it. Yeah, yeah.
It's King Crimson saying, it was me, look at me. I'm going to edit all the parts out that don't feature me. And it's King Crimson's Bizarre Adventure. Yeah.
And Charity Requiem's now in the ending credits.
Yeah.
I don't think Silver Chariot made it last week.
No, I was kind of watching out for him. I was like, no, I don't think I spotted Silver Chariot. I know it's kind of like a melange of bodies and whatnot, but yeah, that seems to have changed this time.
Yep, good stuff. It did dawn on me, though, this week, is that this and part four, the villain, for all the evils that the villains do, in part four, Kira's still doing evil things throughout the story as it's happening. Whereas it feels like Diavolo, the stuff the good guys are after him for has happened long before the show starts. And essentially it's just him wanting them to leave him alone, just like Kira's thing was. Please, just leave me alone.
Just leave me alone to murder women / do all the crimes in Italy.
Yes.
I just want to live a simple life of murdering women / doing crimes
but
in Italy.
But by the end, it almost eclipses what the crime was in the first place. Just this need of the villains to be left alone.
Why are we here again? I thought it was something to do with, like, trying to stop, like, the drug trade. Like, no, I kind of fucking hate this guy now.
And because by the end, like, Kira has, like, had to have stopped doing his hand chopping offs because he was trying to live another identity to be left alone. It's just fascinating. I don't know. I don't think six is like that, but yeah, it was like compared to like the villains of parts 1, 2, and 3. I guess there's some of Dio wanting to be left alone, but they already know who Dio is right from the start. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's like a very interesting way to play a villain.
Well, I suppose like Dio does spend like pretty much all of that part like hiding in a room, and then he fights Jotaro in like the most cowardly way possible.
That's true. He puts a lot of obstacles between him and them, but it's like, but in part 4 and 5, it's like the good guys trying to figure out the bad guy's identity as well, which there's not that issue in.
Part 3, they're just trying to get to him.
Yeah, that was the part 2. It's like, let's take over this Colosseum and have chariot races.
Yeah.
And play people like guitars. I'm interested, because realizing that made me think, I'd be interested to go back and watch the first parts again. See them in the context of where the story goes.
Yeah.
But that's enough JoJo. Next week it's part 2 of this story, but now it's time for the show within the show. All the other anime we watched this week, it's Let's Go! And we start with One Punch Man Season 2, Episode 9, almost caught in a burp there, The Ultimate Dilemma.
That is a dilemma to be caught in.
It is, yes. Do I stop or do I burp my way through this? I really like this episode because it was finally a character giving Saitama some shit for a change.
Like, it was not only like Saitama having two kind of frank conversations about how he's going and why he's doing what he does, but the pacing felt a lot better overall. You know, yes. Like the last few ones have been like, the title is one thing, but that's like the thing that's at the end of this episode and is going to show up in the next one.
Yeah,
this is about the martial arts tournament. No, it's not.
It's a nice mirror of the first episode as well, where the first episode you've got Saitama giving King advice, and in this one you've got King giving Saitama advice, and you're like, okay, now it feels like they're more on equal footing, and they feel like friends now.
Yeah, they do. Like, they're kind of giving each other shit, and it's like you can see King's actually done a bit of growth in that he's went out and bought self-help books so he can give good hero advice.
It's going to be so long until we get to the bit where he tries to make himself tougher. That is so funny in the webcomic.
Okay. Look forward to it.
But yeah, the Saitama dealing with the two martial artists, one is dealt with very quickly, and the second one is dealt with completely off screen.
I love the fact that your man was like, oh yes, you're defending them with your body. Oh, he appears to have gone crazy with fear. And it's just like, you're just looking at him going like, dude, you're so fucked. You don't even know. And your man going like, no, don't go fight that monster. He was much more powerful than that guy who you just killed. You can't do it, man. You're throwing your life away. After I finally met a hero, he threw his life away and like the head like landing next to him. He's just like, oh. Okay.
This Garou has returned from having his ass kicked by Watchdog Man.
And it's a real fucking talking down to him, and it's kind of earned. It's great. And also him going like, man, I can't beat four-limbed martial arts style of a dog.
maybe we should lay off the S-class guys for a while, you know, if you want to, like, that made him in one day.
And he sees the top S-class guy, and he's like, ah, finally, my chance to get kicked through a fucking wall by not that guy.
Okay, we'll call that one a draw. I'll be back tomorrow.
The fact that he's now been kicked twice by Saitama, and Saitama hasn't noticed.
That it's the same guy. Like he said in this episode, I don't remember the name of every guy who I punch.
Usually they die, so I don't need to remember.
Well, this one he's just trying to punt him through a wall, so he's not out and out trying to kill him. I mean, that would have killed most people, to be fair. To be made a cartoon fucking outline in a brick wall, yeah.
And Gidos gets his body recovered. I remember what else. This was the very first thing I watched.
Oh, Zombie Man is tracking that. He's tracking Mr. Mala. I can't remember the motherfucker's name.
Armor Gorilla.
It's Armor Gorilla, who's just out getting groceries.
It's you.
He's like, hey, you're a gorilla. He's like, yeah, what about it? It's not a crime, man.
did you have the bit where, like, this is the Mr. Mala guy coming.
The Mr. Mala guy. He's like, hey, you're a gorilla too. And he's like, what the fuck? It's not a fucking crime. Dude, are you one of them private monsters? Or what way does he put it? Like, not part of the organization. Like,
Freelance
monster. That's probably what he said. Yeah, yeah. And he gets really fucked up because you're not a cyborg gorilla. You're just a gorilla with knives, as far as I can tell.
Yeah. And it's kind of cool to see Armor Gorilla get a shot in because last time we saw him, he's like, oh, like he's fucking big, or a cyber gorilla man, but he gets like opened up by Saitama immediately. He's like, oh, I want to see him. But if it's not Saitama, he's actually pretty strong.
Yes.
Yeah, he just retired because he had to face the strongest guy.
And he's got help in a business now as well.
Yes. And Zombie Man's like, well, I guess I'll follow him instead.
This guy, that other guy got his ass kicked. That guy seems more powerful. Therefore, he's the top threat now. Even though he's literally just doing his groceries in the middle of this monster attack.
I'm trying to remember what else was in there. Oh, the Free Hugs Hedgehog Demon Monster.
Oh, yeah, that thing shows up.
And the people
messed up by Peripheral Prisoner.
Yes.
Yeah.
He thinks the people advising him to back off from it are encouraging him to hug this creature and accept the pain.
Yeah, like the kind of miscommunications there, and I could have done without some of the gay jokes, but yeah, other than that, it's fine. I didn't mind the phone and the butt thing, because like, where else are you going to put it?
I'll say that's a prison joke rather than specifically.
I suppose that's true. Yeah. I just figured it's because he fights naked. It's like, where else is he going to put his mobile phone?
Oh, and Sonic eating the,
Oh, that was fucking great.
Oh.
The two other ninjas show up and go yes. like, hey, we're ninja monsters now. Fucking check it out. Eat this and you'll be one of us. And Saitama, Sonic is kind of like, yes, this is the power that will grant me. And he's like, it's like, all right. What kind of wine can I pair this with?
It's just lovely, like, French cuisine. It's like, ooh, how eloquent, how opulent even.
I'm just thinking it's like, it's all right to be cooked this. And him like just eating that at a table yeah. by himself, like laughing, ha ha ha, soon Saitama, soon I will have my revenge as he's eating his fine cuisine.
You don't know, the effect wears off if you cook the entire thing anyway.
Speed of Sound Sonic later had diarrhea. It's yeah. like, fucking, that's a good joke, man.
Yeah, we bit. Also learned that Flashy Flash is a ninja, I think, in that conversation.
Oh, yeah, I think one of the other ninjas mentioned them or something, isn't it?
Basically, yeah. We want to kill that ninja hero, Flashy Flash.
Yeah, yeah, the whole ninja wars or whatever.
Yeah, they're always like they call him like the last of the 42, because I think that comes up when they meet Flashy Flash just recently in the Shonen Jump translation of the comic.
Okay.
Quite a lot of these ninjas are like the last member of whatever generation they were from a particular village, I think.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, is it like a Fist of the North there, and they're all the last surviving member of their martial arts style, that kind of way?
A little bit, sort of.
I think this is also the point at which Sonic is just a joke character after this point.
Yes. I feel like he's only a threat to... I mean, like, I guess he has that rivalry with Genos, but yeah. Genos is also just a joke character, so... Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember where he crops up again before the bit I'm remembering from the webcomic. Also, yeah, we get the bit with Bang and Bomb. Pursuing Garo.
Oh, yes.
And also they've figured out the monsters have disappeared and they all seem to, hideout is the ghost town City Z, which of course is where Saitama and Genos live.
There goes the neighborhood.
You have the council or whatever reacting to all this stuff and relaying all the information. And then they get a message from the Monster Association. That's right. A message from the Monster Association. Yes. Blah! Fucking, some body horror stuff going on.
Next week is the Encircling Net of Justice.
It's not like the best looking show. It's not season one good, but yeah, this one was a lot better.
Yeah, I think because there wasn't too much like on screen action in episode 9. What there was done for comedy.
The comedy still works. Yeah. That's one of the things that the writing and the acting still brings through.
Yeah, and yeah. I think the pacing of the actual comic is a bit better from here on out as well. It's not trying to do quite so many things all at once.
Right.
But yeah, I'm guessing there's like 2 or 3 episodes left. I'm not entirely sure. We shall see. Either way, you're not getting a satisfying resolution this season.
Yeah.
Then we've got something which we probably are getting a satisfying resolution. That's Dororo, episode 22, The Story of Nui. We've had that one already.
Yes.
Dororo is rescued by Hyakkimaru's mum. Which bodyguard is it? They've definitely decided that they're all women at this point.
This is the first time they've mentioned. Yes. Yeah.
Mutsu has an arm off and is also like dying from plague or whatever it is. And Taimaru is incensed because it's like, you fucking idiot, why are you trying to go out there with me when you're fucking dying of plague? You should just be stayed home here and rested. My master, no, I gotta serve you no matter what.
Yeah, she wants to see the fulfillment of his dream. She's just sorry she won't get to live to see the... Yeah. Because she believes in him, basically.
And she has a very bad, good idea in order to get this fulfilled.
I mean, I get the logic of it, certainly. Yeah.
I mean, it sort of worked by the end of the episode.
I thought they were going to like fucking combine her into like some sort of horrible demon monster. But I mean, like, there's still time for that. So
yeah.
They're a different kind of combiner, which is actually pretty good. I didn't figure that somehow.
Yeah, because thematically, it's way, way more potent.
Because it slowly dawns on you when they come back at the end, and you're like, hang on, they've got
missing pieces of the puzzle, huh?
Yeah.
Because based on the line she tries to sell her body to the demon in order to restore the kingdom, but it can only be done with Hyakumaru's body is the line.
Yeah, the deal was with Hyakumaru's body, and they can't go back on the deal until that's completed. The contract is completed or whatever. Yeah, yeah. But they do have those parts lying around.
Yes, he hasn't claimed those ones back yet. And then throughout the episode is basically Dororo and Hyakumaru's mum sort of bonding. We get like the hint of the end game coming of like the peasants like going, this is all because of samurai. Samurai just pushes everything bad happening to us.
Yeah, we get like three named random peasants, which kind of you get their perspective and stuff. And while some of them kind of understand stuff, other ones are mad at your man's wife even for letting all this happen.
There's all that gold which needs a purpose.
Exactly. The Asakura army are like two fields over and they're going to be here any minute.
Yeah.
And Dororo is basically like insane to Hyakumaru's mum. He's like, all these things you're telling me, tell Hyakumaru when we see him.
I do appreciate Dororo didn't like let her off the hook entirely for what she pulled like half a season ago there.
But he thinks it's important that she tell her son that she did love him. It's just that she chose her position rather than her position as the Dayama's wife or whatever, rather than her position as a mother. She had to pick one, basically.
Yeah, but Dororo is Hyakumaru and why he's gone to like, he's just trying to get back trying to take back what was lost to him, like what he needs.
What was taken from him, yeah.
And despite everything he's gone through, he still does his hardest to try and do it. And then when she had the same opportunity to take back what was lost to her, she didn't take up her achievement. Went with her duty instead of like what she felt her instinct at the mother was, and now she regrets that.
But she decides
to follow her motherly instinct this time rather than her duty, and after escorting Dororo through the secret passage and leaving Dororo off, she says, fuck it, I'm gonna go and just like get the hell out of this place and try and do some good in the world.
Yeah, gonna go talk to her son, presumably.
And meanwhile, throughout the episode, Hyakumaru has gone berserk on the back of a demon horse, murdering everybody he comes into contact with.
Like the first bit where he's just like watching the horse kind of pop out and he's like, okay, horse. And then the second time it kind of cuts back to him and there's a bunch of guards going like, oh man, I wish I was at the front lines. And then Demon Horse shows up and Hyakumaru was just standing there watching it happen. And then the next time he's riding that fucking thing around, riding around a Rapidash there's a fire spin move.
There's fire spin in it.
It's just fire spin. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Okay. That's what I kept thinking.
Exactly. I think I can tell people thought that.
I imagine Rapidash is more based on this horse than the other way around, but yeah.
Yeah.
Also, we see some of the foal, but...
do get some of that bonding between him and Dororo.
I was expecting the foal to be with Dororo, so that will be the thing which kind of makes the horse hesitate.
Hmm.
But that could still happen. Like that he's still happen, in that village. So
And they got a little like connection going on there. Dororo just kind of shooting it, saying, "It's all right. Like you don't need a mom to get by in the world anyway."
It works quite well.
I think that's pretty much all the major points. Apart from at the end, not only have the two bodyguards got Dororo's arms, his brother's...
Or Hyakumaru's arms.
Hyakumaru's arms, rather. His brother's got his eyes.
Fucking reveal, man, of the first eye popping on the scar Hyakumaru just gave him, and the second one popping where his eye should be.
Yeah.
That was class.
It was just a cool, gross little touch, alright.
No. And Hyakumaru in like full rage mode kind of screaming like, hey, those are fucking mine, what the fuck?
Mm.
Was pretty great, yeah.
We'll get fucking, round 3 of this shit now. Or is it round four? I forget.
First time he took the Rally, second time he took the lads' arms.
Yeah, round three. Okay, yeah. This is for all
the first time they didn't fight, basically. They were fighting a giant enemy crab. So,
For all the bananas. All the hands and feet.
Yes, so I guess two episodes, I guess. Feels like what the pace is for the ending.
I could see this, like, ending the next one, but
It'll be dealing with D3 and fallout of that, and that demon's gonna show up and start, like, raising hell.
Literally. Oh, man, they've cut to it enough times that I feel like that thing is gonna come out.
Yeah.
I'm just curious as to whether it gives it the ending of just Hyakumaru denying that he even has parents, except the Doctor, which is what the comic has. He's like, doesn't get revenge on his dad at all, in terms of, like, any sort of violent revenge, just walks straight past him. His mum pleads with him, walks straight
past him. That would be probably the more satisfying one, because obviously the path of vengeance is shown to be very, 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 very bad. Yeah.
Yes. We'll see. I'm confident they're going to, whatever way to do it, they're going to sit the landing on this one.
Yeah.
I suspect he won't be quite as big a jerk to Dororo at the end.
I have to go now. My planet needs
you. Yes. Stay here.
Well, I presume is like Dororo is going to be one of the few things that is his family right now.
Yeah.
Bro,
come back, bro.
It does help that Dororo is played by an age-appropriate actress who is very good. So that's the thing throughout the series. That she is the thing that the entire series hangs on, is that performance.
But yeah, initially I was wondering, when we first started watching, like, why the show is called Dororo rather than Hyakumaru kind of thing. But yeah, absolutely, the heart of everything.
Next up is, where have I put my list? It is Karakuri Circus, episode 34, Rear Guard. Pretty quick episode to recap, because it's just three fights.
Wow, it's a good thing everyone fucking died trying to stop them fighting, because they sure do end up fighting in this episode.
And one of them ends up disappearing, but a third of the way through the episode.
Yep.
So Harlequin ends up fighting Eleonore, and
Harlequin and Arlequin end up fighting, so that's fucking great.
Harlequin, attack Arlequin. What, did you say Arlequin attack Harlequin? No, other way around.
And the pair of them end up getting whisked off the train, and we don't see what happens to them, if I remember
correctly. Our plan is, like, to basically tie him up and
I'd
jump off the train with him to take him with you, kind of thing.
Narumi has to fight the guy who's made of rockets. He basically has a crisis of confidence. It's like, which feels like an allegory about using guns, maybe.
How so?
Because he's like, he keeps on questioning himself, why do I keep on using the rockets? And he's, oh, it's because the very first time I used it, I finish somebody off instantly.
Yeah, it's the idea that he was going to use martial arts because it was like, it was more like a battle of true strength rather than just being cheap as chips. But the fact that he used it once means it's like you're willing to resort to it, and therefore there's that temptation the whole time. Yeah,
and then he just has a mental breakdown.
Well, that Narumi's having the mental breakdown, getting his ass kicked at martial arts, where he's like, oh, now that I think about it, I was really mean to Eleonore. Fucking dude. What the hell?
You gotta remember the amnesia. Now.
He said he didn't have it anymore.
Not fair.
dear.
But
yeah.
No, that's why he feels bad. That's why he feels bad that he was bad, not mean to her.
But yeah, he starts pulling out the key punches and everything. On your man, using the real martial arts.
Yes. And then meanwhile, Masaru is fighting the guy he thinks is a human being.
Yeah, and Masaru's doing just crazy fucking moves. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think my favorite one was jumping off the puppet and just falling free fall with a katana at the guy with rocket boots.
What's the argument they have about? It's like the past and...
Your man's obsessed with the past, and I think Masaru says something like, the past doesn't fucking matter, dude. It's about living for the now. And he's like, yeah, but you're using the downloaded martial arts training that your man, therefore you're living off the past. And he's like, I'm using it so that I don't have to be in that shittiness because the past was shit. That kind of thing. Building on top of a foundation that is terrible and you know is bad. Not dwelling in it.
Then they start arguing about traditions as well at the end.
Yeah.
And then he uses his grandfather's sword to...
With the spirit of his grandfather helping him like Goku and Gohan.
Neat.
Yeah. I feel like this is like the one bit where having that extra bit of story they cut out where he was training for a while would have.
Yeah, because the quick explanation here is like you downloaded the faceless's stuff. Yeah.
I'm saying that's in the comic as well because I think that's important for what he does at the end.
Okay.
Because at the end they're in Narumi's having to hold off. Is it like thousands?
Like, it's certainly more than we've ever seen before, which is, we've already saw like 3,000, so, yeah. All coming at the rocket launching pad.
Yeah.
And everyone's there, including that muscle guy, who I don't know his name because he didn't really.
And the cameraman guy.
Oh yeah, he gets fucked up.
The cameraman puppet, who has a bigger role in the comic as well.
Is his only ability to, like, turn the flash on in his camera?
I believe so, yes. He's just, like, documenting everything which is happening, I'm thinking, in the comic.
Okay, fair enough. Because, yeah, we haven't really seen him.
But he kind of has to be here for Masaru to shoot the flash in Narumi's eye so Narumi can't see him at the end of the episode.
Like, I like that bit. Like, again, a lot of that kind of stuff works where it's Narumi's fighting really hard, and he's fighting so hard he can't turn around because he knows he's not being attacked from the back. So someone's clearly protecting him. But he can't turn around and look at who because of this fight being so intense. And obviously it's Masaru.
And then that allows them to do out of crazy 360 animation around the pair of them.
Yeah.
And at the end, so Masaru is like, I finally get to see you again after 31 episodes. But yeah. I'm not going to let you see me. Flash. End of episode. I know why. Can you guess why?
Because it'll make him sad because he has to go to space to die.
Close. But kind of the opposite.
Oh, okay. Wait.
It will make Narumi sad when Masaru takes his place and goes in the rocket.
Oh, that would be Masaru. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, because it's a much better plan to send Masaru than Narumi. Let's send the guy.
Well, Narumi, the man who used to be happy-go-lucky and everything, but now is all about vengeance and death.
And he has the face of the man Faceless hates the most.
Yeah, as in, like, I feel like he's not going to go up there with the right frame of mind of talk this guy down, Narumi.
Whereas the guy who's actually seen...
Narumi from the start of the show might have been able to talk him down, but Narumi now? Yes. Fuck off.
Whereas Masaru has seen Faceless's life. Because he's had it downloaded into his head twice.
dear.
Two more episodes of this as well. Yeah, generally, it can't really put a foot wrong now because there's not enough of the characters left to worry about.
Yeah, it's like, again, it's a standard thing. It's burdened me pretty bad and that's always going to be there no matter how better paced these episodes are, but there's also going to be those things where the things don't have quite the much as hit. Like you said, we didn't get any of the training with Masaru and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it's almost happier when something can start off not so well, but finish relatively strongly, where something that starts off really strong and then peters out.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that's true.
You're right there.
Because now, like, at least this way, you could be, like, pleasantly surprised when it actually lands.
I might have pleasant memories
resembling
back
a theme
at it.
Or message.
Yeah.
And there are people who have loved it from the start.
Are still enjoying it,
so they're going to love it by the end.
Yeah. I think of it as like this A to B point where in the comic it was, no, very straightforward, a little squiggly, but now for this is sort of like a mess of scribbles, but then it goes into a lovely clean straight line at the other side anyway.
I feel like I said earlier, I feel like that's because you haven't quite decided what the comic was about until halfway through.
I feel like doing the show where you're making heavy edits is the time to figure that out and re-edit it. Yeah. Like, write characters out, write new fucking characters in if you need to, dude.
I thought that was the idea, like, you know, yeah, why you were exactly. Supposed to do that. I thought, okay, well, I'm sure he knows what he's doing. But he's still working up notes from however long ago.
Yes. Then we got Wacky TV, Na Na Na, second season, episode 10, Onslaught, a dark, terrifying enemy, in which they are set upon by the leader of the bats. But he's not threatening enough, so they improve him by making all sorts of satire about TV Tokyo again.
I did like we put in a lot of talking heads and what they were saying coming up on screen. I was like, oh man, I hate it when they do that. Yeah. It's such bad design. It just hurts my eyes.
Yeah, it's terrible.
More busy. No, it doesn't matter what they're saying, as long as it comes up on screen in big, bold letters.
More is good, right?
And CGI the shit out of that bat. Copy paste.
Subtlety is for losers.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's mad at them for eating one of his brothers earlier in the series.
That was in the stew, wasn't it?
He was, yes.
Oh, yeah.
There's continuity. The show has continuity.
And then the punchline is, there was actually loads of bats all along, and the rest of them are animated in CG.
Also, they look more threatening, because there's like a fuckload of them, so, yeah.
Mm. And they all say, we're going to eat well tonight.
I assume they're like fruit bats, because, you know, bananas.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
They keep away threats like, we're going to cook you like you're a plantain.
Yeah. Well, how else would you have when a three-course dinner just walks into your kitchen?
Anyway, it needs to be good. I should really watch the first season when this is finished.
Same.
I had not realised, because it's not on the UK, or I don't think outside of Canada and the US, is that short show about the penguin walking around Japan.
Yeah, I was wondering what happened to that. I thought it was just got delayed or happened to
it. Or it was going to come out when all of it was out, one of those
situations. Regional restriction.
Yeah.
No, it was added this season to Crunchyroll, but we can't watch it unless you've got something which convinces Crunchyroll that you're American.
I believe this this loyalty card for Five Guys will suffice.
Yeah, that'll do the trick. Come on inside. Next up, it's Sarazanmai, episode 10. I want to connect, but I can't. You can't.
It is rough, man.
I can't. But such wonderfully constructed roughness.
Yeah.
Like, I love how they're, like, redoing the format, but with the prior, what did he call them? Vassals? Guardians or something?
Yeah. It was like, you know, well, there was nothing there besides the badges. You know, just because you work for otters and we were otters ourselves. It was, well, Kaplan, man, like you. Oh, what a reveal.
And Dark Kepi is Kepi's despair. Because, it suddenly throws in, you've had like, love and desire all this time, and all of a sudden, despair appears. And I like the way that I just love the way that it's like, you think that Toei's the one who's got it most sorted right near the start of the series, and he's the one they've got to do the most desperate scramble for to save by the end of the series.
He's the one who basically gets the most fucked up from us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, I just realized in comparison, you know, they've actually like, worked through their shit, but sort of, as he's gone on,
it's gotten worse. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was already pretty fucking bad. He had, like you said, Brian, he started with, like, a reasonably level head and a goal in mind. Like, he knew what he wanted out of life, but then all of that went to the shit. So, yeah. It's an interesting way to do it as well. Because then that makes you feel more, like, pity for the kid, obviously.
Yeah.
Mm. And just that the fucking crippling thing is that if he... if he had sort of like, you know, tried to build up the connection more with his newfound friends and try and, you know, like, break off the connection with the brother who, like, as much he wanted, eventually messed him over. Mm. If he could have come out as better, it would have been, still would have been sad for him, but
he probably again, it's that thing about, it's that thing about, like we were saying last week, where you kind of need to realize that when you need to cut the toxic people out of your life, even though they are the people you cared about at one time, the relationship isn't the same. You don't have the same connection, and it's only pulling you down with them.
Yeah.
But any of them who get put through the ringer this week. It's Rio and Marva who are the ones.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. They're obviously going to get hit pretty hard now in this one. Jesus. There's a lot of nastiness in this one.
Yeah. What's it? But Rio, he comes to the cap, which he marches to a gunpoint down to the police box, down to the Otter Kingdom. I'm gonna have those dishes, please. Also, I've been trying to find Kepi anyway to begin with.
Yeah. Also, the Otter Kingdom just seems to be one singular otter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mad scientist otter or something. It could be just the last remnant left behind after the war that they talked
the
about.
The last Tasmanian devil in the zoo kind of thing, maybe, yeah.
Mm.
Not Tasmanian devil, Tasmanian
it's
tiger.
It's never I'm an otter, it's I'm otter. Whenever
yeah.
he's introducing it to people.
I am the idea of otter.
I am your desire.
So.
It is legion. And what's it now? He just says, what are you? What are you here for? And I am your desire. And I appear to you and I will take the form that is most pleasing to you and bend you to my whims. It's more like temptation, really.
Yes.
Mm.
And presumably that temptation to lead you to the third thing, despair.
Yeah. Well, love and, desire can equally lead to despair.
Yes.
Like, separately, but also you can kind of follow that train as well.
But yeah, they're only they only seem to be boxing up and, processing the despair ones and just throwing the love ones away, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's like the idea of like the purity of love, like, your man's younger brother. It's just like, well, we can't really corrupt that. There's nothing wrong with that. That's fine. But with the desire and such, they can use that as a tool to get you to do what they want, as they're doing with the cops.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's like the thing about the heart is that if he declares his love for Ryu, his heart will explode.
Yeah, if you use anything to say that you care about him, then you'll die. And he's like, well, I don't want to die because that would upset the guy I love. So I just won't tell him I love him.
If this hair grows more than 3 sizes in one day, it will explode.
And it wasn't so much even though the reveal was on the leak was on him. It was more so him finding out this after the fact than having to relive all the times you were remarkably shit to him while he was having to keep it all bottled up inside.
Yeah.
Pretty cruel. Yeah.
Mm, but it's a cruelty orchestrated by the otter anyway.
Yeah.
It wasn't to know, but he still feels...
You feel complicit, because obviously you... Yeah.
Mm. And you could have those dishes, please, because now, like, they finally have the... Well, what's it now? As he's trying to get the dishes off him, you know as well this one, like, you destroy a Kappa zombie that they disappear from this world, so... Like, he wants to get the dishes to wish Mabu back, but as in the process of that, he's forgetting what he's here for and why he's getting so, like, angry about as well.
Yeah, him being broken up is like, wait, why the fuck did I want this? Like, after pulling the gun on him, it's like, I wanted to bring someone back, but I don't remember who.
Yeah, and he's blazing around, literally burning all his bridges.
Kepi did put Mabu in his top pocket.
Yeah. Like some sort of distillation of Mabu.
Yes, because when Ryo dies, he becomes a similar ring with his name.
And they're both linked as chains, yeah.
Mm. And then Toei, because Toei's just killed him, and then he's at gunpoint, he demands the dishes. Then the end credits play, and you think, oh, what a terrible
cliffhanger.
Cliffhanger, but that's not the cliffhanger. because that's resolved during the credits. You don't even get to see them use the wishes, the dishes for the wishes.
Mm. Yeah, because obviously your man's, like last episode, the clock's ticking on top of his head. And he's bleeding out in the street, and it's like, hey, give me those dishes or so I can get my brother back. And your man's like, but I got to bring back the guy who's dying right in front of me right now.
Yeah, and presumably, rough. Yes, during the credits that he'd realised, yes, he has to do that. Because then the very first thing you see after the credits is enter back in his human form saying, right.
Yeah, and Tori's like, yeah, actually, can't really blame you. If I were in your position, I would have done the exact same thing.
And then he's led and given into temptation.
Well, Dark Kippy is released.
Yeah.
And it lays, it's what it lays waste upon him. I noticed now that effect we were seeing, when a Kappa zombie is made and that whole world kind of, it is erupting someone from him. It was like, they're being fed into Dark Kippy and it's just turning him into that.
Yeah, presumably he's similarly pooping them out.
And
yes, they're going to cease every connection in this world.
And Toy is ensorcelled in with a vision of his departed brother saying, come on, bro, let's get out of here. And he walks away into the shadows and is like, no, we gotta get Toy back. Shit. Also take out that giant monster.
And Kepi's going to get his dark side back.
Mm.
I now wonder whether the comic is actually a sequel, not a prequel.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Either way, I just want to read after this to see if I get more insight on this or this.
Is it completely unrelated?
Situation. Or unrelated because I enjoy the characters, but it's more good stuff, man. I like to leave the ending credits running because they actually are like one of the kind of perfect songs to sort of like to try and process some of the heavy scenes. Because the song is so upbeat, but like the lyrics of it is actually very melancholy, and that's kind of how I feel right now. I was really, really excited about the episode, but now I feel really melancholy because of what's transpired.
you're right. I think you can't, because it's so well made. It's like the darkness of the story can't consume, but also because there's always hope, because you've seen two guys be saved.
Yeah, and like now, one of our guys who's like, yes, I must reform with my dark side because humanity must be truly dark and light. It's a small little football motherfucker who is a cartoon character within a cartoon.
But it grows like a big muscly chest right near the start of the episode to protect them.
Yeah. Like, what I mean is he moves like a friggin', like a crazier than Looney Tunes character. So, you know, there's it all seems dark and dour and, real in terms of how fucked everything seems. But there's still that hope because it's presented in this wacky craziness.
Yeah, I think the 11 episode size helps a lot. Perhaps helps to focus him. I'm just remembering Penguin Drum. Where that felt like it had like a little too many threads.
Yeah, this feels it's very much clear, and it's rather than try and model it up with different themes and lists, kind of is sort of just reinforcing them in different ways. And it's all the stronger for it.
I don't know if there's actually symbolism behind like all the main characters being, you know, characters with designs and personalities and stuff, and then everyone else in the world just being like a 2D cutout.
Yeah, he does that, or is that every time.
Does he always do that? Yeah. Okay. Because I was wondering, is that a way of like focusing? It's like only these characters matter. Anyone else you see doesn't fucking matter.
No, I'm sure there's something about them having non-modern designs to them this time.
With the traditional hairs and everything, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's like the characters who are actually designs are animated in the story are the ones you want to care about. They're the main cast. It's probably a whole number from his theater influences where, like, you only have the...
Right.
Such a catch up on the stage at any time. Anything else, like, for a big crowd or whatnot, that you
just need to
simulate by different effects. And in animation, you can do whatever the heck you like.
Yeah.
Do that.
Yeah. And that's like, I think what I said early on, there's stuff about the particular area setting as well, but not just the Kappa stuff, but not so much in these recent episodes, but in some of the earlier episodes, because it's on the street.
It's in a very specific fucking
part. Yeah, there's lots of restaurants, but there's also lots of places to get food preparation supplies in that area.
Okay.
And that, I guess, why there's a lot of food-related desires to some of the Kappa zombies.
Because it's just that part of town.
Yeah.
It'll be a next hot anime pilgrimage site, to be sure.
Well, yeah, they've taken all the photos for you already in the end credits.
Like, just in case, like, you're trying to locate Scout, don't worry about it. We're actually, it's in the end credit sequence. Just fucking go there.
Next, Fruits Basket, episode 11. This is a wonderful inn. How wonderful was it, guys?
It's not bad. It's a present from Momiji because it's White Day, and when that's when they said a holiday in Japan, or it looks like a holiday. It's just like, what's it called?
I get what you mean. It's not a day off. It's just like fucking a time of year where people do a thing. It's a traditional day.
I found that day, March 14th, and when all the girls had given all the boys they like or care for some chocolates, now it's up to the boys to return the favor on March 14th and give something nice to the girls then. And Momiji is like, oh, I want to give you like a nice little gift as well because, you were so cool to me on Valentine's Day and I want to take you away for a weekend in the Hot Springs Inn spa place. It'd be great. It'd be fantastic. It's run by the family. It's totally legit. Sounds cool.
Yeah. I was initially worrying at the start of the episode because they were doing like tests and stuff and, Toru got called out by the teacher and I was like, wait, did she actually fuck up the test? But she says like, okay, I guess I'm just going to have to work harder and take extra hours. And I was like, what is the problem here?
Yeah, what is that?
I wouldn't say it's a traditional day either, by the way. It was established in 1978 by the National Confectionery Industry Association.
Obviously. No, dude, it's like Mother's Day and Father's Day and shit. It's just like, this is invented by the greetings card companies sell more shit. I get that, but I like the idea behind it, you know?
Yeah. Anyways, Toru was falling behind, and I guess she's fucking, you gotta pay like your
deposit
for the school tour, for the school trip, you know, like, you know, so many things, but I guess, Toru, not having any parents who can care for her, she's been like doing herself, working her job, but,
No, she spent all last week's, money on chocolate for all the boys, and they're all like, aw, we are pricks.
Well, they all figure it out all at once. Kyo's just like, you know, he's about to flip out, but it's like,
I do like the anger level.
Maybe
rising.
We should go for a bath right now. It'd be a good idea.
Toru, take a bath. It's really nice. And then he's like, guys, we gotta fucking sort this out.
So, Kyo wasn't gonna go because fucking Yuki was there, be there. So it's like, okay, look, if you want to come along, I'll go with you. Fucking Yuki, you're not, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, yes, it makes you so happy. It's like, oh my gosh, I know you're so much fun with, I was there. And we got a nice little thing where Kyo was actually, kind of amused by that and genuinely kind of laughing about it. It's like, oh, fucking Egypt, it's like, but it's the Yuki walks and he's back to his old ways again. And Kyo's agreed to come with us to the trip to the hospitals. And Yuki to himself, that's unfortunate. It seems to be a little less of, what Yuki's going. It's like something like, now I'll be a way I can talk to Toru without Kyo being around. Like, he has something, was it? Because he's looking over at his school bag. He's got a little wrapped package in there as well. Probably a gift for a certain someone that he wants to give to her. Yeah. Anyways, they all stall out then to the hospital's place and, staff by
Like, Hot Springs is fairly, like, it's standard, it's pretty good, but the woman running it is fucking crazy, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, she's one of the summer family members, probably one of the people who serves them, and, like, she's quite frail and sickly, but, so she appears in you and she seems like, you know, she's like a ghost or some kind of spirit or something.
She comes at you like a fucking zombie, basically.
Yeah. And she stays in her place because the water is also good for her health, so they're like, manage the whole thing.
Initially Toru's like, I wonder if I can tell her if she knows the secret. I'm not entirely sure if she's one of the family members who's in on it, but as later on she recognizes that the guy is the cat boy, he's like, I thought you were a nice, upstanding young man as a cat, but apparently you're a perv. also one of her kids is the monkey, I think.
The monkey, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you'll probably run into him sometime soon because he lives outside of the state like Mr. Sugar Ray. So
I'm sure you'll come across him one of these days. What's he like? You don't know when you meet him.
Yeah, just profusely apologetic going into one of her... She has several crazy kind of... I was going to say fits, but more so like things where she just starts wailing and screaming. It's pretty funny. It's good performance. But yeah, no, it just goes regular. When I said the pervert thing before, it was more so that the rabbit kid wanted to bathe with Toru, and they were all like, fucking no. And then he said, okay, cool. I mean, like, if that's not cool, I'll just sleep with her then. Is that okay?
No, stop.
Stop it, you little weirdo. And then everyone assumed that the cat guy wanted to do it instead. And he was like, no, I was saying he can't do it. Not that I want to. Don't be weird. Everyone's being open up. No one does any peeking or anything. So, okay, we avoided that fucking thing. Thank goodness.
It's completely chaste and innocent.
But except then for one thing at the end, I guess.
Yeah. Like Yuki, it was Toru outside because they were playing ping pong earlier and Nika's walked out. He's like, oh, like, are you okay? Are you okay? He's not getting mad at Kyo again. Everyone said, no, dude. The way you flubbed that shot back there was hilarious, but I couldn't burst out laughing back there. It ruined my whole like image and brand I got going on. It's like, oh, that's all right. So it's kind of nice to see you kind of a little more open up and kind of be a little looser like this. Like, yeah. Actually, I got a present for you. I got a little like, I didn't know what to get you precisely, but I thought this ribbon might kind of suit you the best. And she just always told me, she puts it on. And it's just kind of like kind of burgeoning connection between them, you know. Toru was just nice to everybody, so she would be grateful and acceptable anyway. But it feels like they're getting the sense that Yuki is trying to pursue something a little more. Yeah, no?
I mean, like, he goes in to grab the ribbon and is like, oh, it looks beautiful on you, Hime-sama, and kisses the ribbon and shit, and just like, she's like, okay, right. Was not expecting that. So it's a nice kind of turn where you can see him kind of growing as well, and just him kind of openly laughing and being joyous and shit is unusual. So yeah, it's kind of cool to see the growth in them.
Yeah. There's a nice, well, kind of a sad story where there's a nice kind of spin in this, you know, which also helps guilt the lads into going to the hospital hotel with them.
Because as soon as he said that story, I was like, what a lame story. In that I was just like, fuck it. If someone told me that story, it's like, why did you tell me that incredibly depressing children's story?
There was a story about a traveler who,
the stupid traveler.
Who
got conned by every motherfucker and was eventually eaten by demons because she got conned that hard.
Yeah, and then the demons don't get, we got a little gift for you, and just like write it on a paper the word idiot. And then, so he ends. Or does it, because this person, they were so giving and trustful and nice to the world, and they said even at this, oh, thank you, it's the first gift anybody ever given me, I love it, I cherish it forever. And it's like, isn't that kind of nice that this person has a positive outlook on life, even though after being all true so much, they still want to give some more of themselves, maybe a lot more in the sensible than they should do, and maybe it's like you should be honest to try and like listen to that behavior and maybe try and do something to help them out instead. I wonder who we know who's like that.
Yeah, that the behavior is admirable. You don't blame the victim of the crime for being like a decent fucking person, that kind of thing. That's a good way of convincing them. But I did like the ending coda as well, where they revealed that the rabbit kid isn't like a little kid. He's actually like about to go into the same school as them.
Yeah. And Tor's like, what the fuck, dude? I thought you were like 8 or some shit. What the hell?
Yeah. It's good.
And that was a little more like, school hijinks the next semester. And Haru is going to be like joining them as well, because he's starting high school along with them. Besides, that'd be kind of a nice expanding of the school cast, and yet more weird Soma family cousins that Uo and Hanajima can just cast a weary eye over, and probably has some nice bossy interactions with. Yeah,
actually,
good stuff.
Speaking of, I did like the bit with Hannah at the start where everyone thought she'd be good at tests because she can read vibes, but she's like, no, I can read vibes so good that I'm dumb as shit.
Yeah. Yes, there was a call at a time. I was in the principal's office, and my mother was called. She came in.
she cried, I believe. And they're all just like, dude, that's really bad.
The waves are hazy right now. I can't quite make it out.
Again, good bits, good character stuff. And it's nice to see the kind of growth and the growing together and stuff. The most tragedy in this one is the tragic story where they're like, hey, let's not let this happen to character we care about.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Right, next up, it is Bungo Stray Dogs, Season 3, Episode 35, Cannibalism, Part 2. in which the Port Mafia of the Armed Detective Agency go against each other, go against their bosses' wishes, until the bosses just go, let's go and fight ourselves, so the rest of them don't kill each other.
Yeah. Like, literally what needs to happen is one of us needs to die, so let's just both fight. Fucking problem solved.
Yeah. But still, however, because as we're married to each other, we have a lot more that we are responsible for and care about now, don't we? Yeah. And this is the way that responsibility coming down on top of us right now.
Meanwhile, Poe gets involved as well, and Mee-chan the cat is apparently gonna sort things out.
that raccoon gets a little a nice bit as well.
Yeah. I do like that all the armed guards, and it's just like, what the fuck just happened? that was pretty good.
Hey, Chia, we need good books, Lily.
Hey, check it out! Now we're stuck in a book where we don't have powers, and I'm smart, and you're a dumbass. Good luck, fucker.
Oh, that's why I asked Paul.
By the way, half the people in this book are murderers. So, yeah, best of luck.
I asked Paul to write one of those, survival horror manga.
And, yeah, Paul on the rooftop going is like, yeah, like, oh, I can't believe I got used like that. Well, maybe if he dies in there, I'll be the victor. But if he dies in there, who am I going to fucking, like, crush on? Like, conflicted feelings all over the place with him.
But if I do a good job, then maybe he'll praise me. Yeah.
Yes.
So who else? Oh, the guy with the lemons has developed.
I thought that guy
launcher.
Was like done. I thought he was kind of useless, but he's just shown up with like all the lemons.
Yeah.
That's his solution to the problem. And they're all like, I guess we can't fight all the lemons. That's kind of got us there.
Again, this would be a favorite Port Mafia officer tactic where she's going, I'm going to explode the air like this. Maybe if you get caught in it, it's your own fault.
Yeah. Isn't that his thing? Like the lemons don't hurt him or something?
Lemon-shaped bombs won't hurt him.
Yes.
Yes. But they will obviously function as bombs. So, yeah.
So I made this ejecting the pocket device that will just like keep continuing to launch lemon bombs and explode in the air, creating an impenetrable curtain of explosions to protect me and attack you with.
I not only spent like all fucking week making lemon bombs, but I already said he stayed up all night or something like that, but he's made two suitcases full of mortars that shoot lemon bombs.
Yes, that puts an end to the deal which is going on underground between Akutagawa and
Kyoka.
Yes, as he discovers that, there's not much he can do against her power. But also that she's no longer the killer that she used to be.
Or indeed that he used to be.
Yes.
Yeah, that she's actually a step above where she was because she's got something to live for kind of thing.
But then he gets the call saying, he's going to do Lemon Runway.
Oh, shit.
Oh, fuck, I better get out of here. Dear.
And then the sister of the guy and the woman who got the job at the detective agency who looks after Mee-chan, she's worried that Mee-chan's gone missing. And every time Mee-chan goes missing, it's because something's happening to the present.
Sister's kind of like, let's just let all this shit blow over, dude.
Yeah, luckily Tanizaki on the phone outside the hospital, says, isn't that Mee-chan walking by right now?
Linchpin, that thing.
Well, yes. You'll see next episode. There's a reason why it's intercut with the stuff with the president and Murray getting into their duel.
It's a plot vital raccoon.
Cat.
Cat, sorry, I'm mixing up the raccoon and the cat now. Yeah.
The raccoon's just a trained raccoon.
The
cat is going off to stop that fight.
Oh, I want some as well, Atsushi and Doppo are on the case, even though Doppo was like, I hit a kid! I can't get back on the street again. kind of stuff.
But he's kind of new resolve to not let it happen again, because he can't stop what has happened, but he can stop it from happening again, maybe.
Yeah. They go and think, oh, well, maybe like, some Gatai, the ability user who can control, like, it was machine empathy. Maybe if we asked him to try and track down the leader of the rats in the House of the Dead ages ago,
maybe he's got abusing the guy as well. No, he's not here. If we look at the video camera set up in his room with the paranoid guy, you can see that at some point, Fyodor Dostoevsky busts into the room and just fucking fill him full of holes. And sure, if we turn the blanket back, it's a puddle of blood there. But where's the body?
Dun, dun, dun. Another mystery for the detectives to solve in the middle of this war.
And then, yeah, the duo, we learn that the daughter is actually his power. That's confirmed. Obviously, it was, like, hinted at all the way up to this point.
It was unsure whether, his ability was to give her superpowers or was she just his stand. And, yeah, she's just his stand.
Hmm.
Yeah, who appears to have entirely her own sentience. I suppose that's like,
Sex Pistols.
I'm talking about the ones established in this show.
Demon Snow.
Yeah, Demon Snow.
Yeah.
Well, in like the film, like, when they got separated out as well, like, I could have gone with Rashomon to kind of like its own form as well.
Yeah.
Okay, right.
And, Atsushi had to come to terms connect with the tiger.
So they do sometimes have their own kind of personality or something. I mean, like, you could say Demon Snow is her mother's inherited will kind of thing, but still has a different thought process than the user.
But no, none of them seem to have like quite as much personality as Vita Sexualis does.
That's an unfortunate name. What does that represent?
It's name of a book. Yes. Give it a rest.
They're all named after a book.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's named after a character, I think, in a different book by the same author.
Okay. So it's like two references in one package,
Like, but thank God it's a fun Nabokov leading the fucking poor mafia, okay? Let's put it that way.
And they finish this with them about a duel.
Yeah. And you know, that's probably going to be a pretty cool fight, but I'd say we're only going to roll up into that whenever the rest of the detectives land on the scene.
Yeah, I don't know whether the cat stops the fight before it gets going or not.
I'll be okay with that. Yeah, again, this show does a great job of like jumping around between different things, but you never feel lost when moving between the different parties.
Yeah, I now need to go back and watch those other episodes to see what the cat's up to during those episodes, to see if it's in scenes that we weren't noticing it being in.
Like, it's being important in the scenes by just sitting there licking its balls or whatever,
It's listening carefully, gathering intel.
Yeah, I believe that is the gist of what is going on with that cat. Niall, I think you hit the nail on the head.
Oh god, is a cat a stand user or ability user as well?
We've seen the cat in the cat is in the anime before it's introduced in the published version, because the cat is in that first light novel adaptation in another form.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
It will all become clear in the next episode, I do believe.
Cool.
Then we've got One Piece episode 889. Finally it starts. That's just rubbing it in. The conspiracy-filled reverie, because that is what you'll be saying 17 minutes into the episode. After the gang of revolutionaries have done reminiscing about Sabo's brother and all his friends. I mean, I will say, it's a lot clearer in the anime that what they're there for is rescuing Kuma.
Oh, they make that explicit?
Yeah, it's very explicit. Between the last two episodes, that is what they're there for.
Yeah.
Above anything else.
Well, I mean, like, I suppose it doesn't really have to make it too clear. They're revolutionaries. All the world's leaders are gathered here. There's a lot they could do, like take out these motherfuckers. But yeah, obviously their plan is a one specific plan.
But the rest of the episode is, as it says, the reverie begins. So we get that long look at like all the other people who are kings. Now, what do they say? I can't remember exactly. It's like 170, 180 countries are aligned to the world government, and 50 representatives from those countries come to the referee. However many years.
50 each?
No, the 50 from 50 countries. So 50 countries are representing the larger mass of countries.
170 countries. I was just tubbing through actually, a volume from the East Lobby Guard the other day, and it's like mentioned again, it's like 170 nations like under this flag.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure if they make it like clear, like that some of these nations are, like they're in it because, you know, they're from an old family, they're from old money, or other guys like WAPOL is like, oh yeah, this is an up and coming like business thing. So obviously they get a say, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I guess you just like pitch during the time in between to say. I think you just have to roll up with your sword and stick it in front of the throne, I think is essentially what you have to do.
Yeah, kind of surrender to the government to be part of it or something.
To say there is no one ruler over us, except of course by the end of this episode, there is one ruler over them.
It's him!
So yes, but they're discussing, mainly discussing Luffy and, like some of them are like, oh, it's terrible, but all the people who know him, like, Elisabetto is like guffawing to himself about the deeds of Luffy. He's like, yeah.
Wait, is that the punch game?
He's the guy, yes, he's the guy who, he's one of many guys, but he's the guy who feels like he should be voiced by Brian Blessed.
Yeah, I can see that.
And we pick up of, just as in the comic, no pickup of whatever the conversation was that the elders were having with Shanks. But then we see the mysterious figure we saw with the giant straw hat going through some wanted posters and photos. And, they've sliced up Blackbeard and Luffy's wanted posters. And they've stuck a sword, I think, through Shirahoshi's photo, and the only one they haven't defaced is Vivi's. The elders are discussing that how they still consider the Nefertiti family traitors, because they were the one of the 20 original families who didn't take charge 800 years ago. They didn't become celestial dragons. Anyway, and then like a maid or like a waiting some sort of servant comes to Imu and says the elders are awaiting you, and this mysterious person with mysterious red eyes we now see.
Red eyes.
Takes to the empty throne, and they all kneel, and, they ask, who do you want eliminating from history? I think that's the phrase, or something along those lines. Because it's time for another purge. They basically discuss beforehand that the keeping the balance, it's too difficult to keep the balance at the moment. Things are moving too quickly, so there's gonna have to be a purge. Because the balance.
The supernova, the Shaky Back, I keep fucking changing chairs like it's fucking musical chairs.
You've got the two main things, I think, are Morgan's saying Luffy is the fifth emperor.
Yeah.
There's only allowed to be four. Yeah, and too much power.
Fujitora rolling up to the reverie when he's told not to come in order to try and convince people, having private meetings with various kings, saying we should get rid of the Shichibukai.
It's a crappy system. I mean, see how many corrupt people get into it and come out of it.
For fuck's sake, we had a guy running an international drug ring, I'm using our connections, I'd be letting him in. What the fuck?
And presumably there's other stuff we'll learn when we get to the Wano. Obviously we know because we've read the comic. But, obviously they're bothered about Luffy and Kaido and Big Mom. All convening in one location.
You're all supposed to stay to your own little part of the ocean and be the king there.
Well, it's like the king, the kings of the reverie are dismissing it because they're like, oh, it's a lawless country. They're not part of the world government. Doesn't we have to worry about it?
Yeah, but if they all team up, you're fucked.
Yes, whereas obviously the Marines know about the gun running slash
Drug cartel?
They were drug cartel, and slave, well, everything Doflamingo's doing, but particularly the gun running and the, fake devil fruit running.
Oh, the
smiles.
Hmm.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, if you're in their position, and they try and basically keep a balance of these three powers, and people are starting to throw it off. Both internally and externally. Yeah.
You gotta do a hard reset on it.
Reset. Time for another reset of history.
Yeah. I'm just kind of thinking like what Shanks there for. It's like, okay, so Five Emperor stuff. What do you want me to do about it? What can I do for you? Like, you kind of wonder, is he there on the level, or is he going to try and make some appeal to them? Is he going to offer himself up to try and refuse this, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
I'll step down if Luffy can be the new fourth. Something like that?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. But obviously, they're worried about Blackbeard because they've given him that thing to look at as well. And yeah. They should be right, because Blackbeard's the guy who probably, just like Luffy, is going to be... Well, he's a D, isn't he? So that's the other reason why they fear him.
He is a real fucking D, alright?
Yeah. So I kind of wonder if that whole family thing, original family thing, is, and the whole Will of D, does that go back to something like there, where that name being passed down?
I assume I would guess whoever it's that hat belongs to.
Yeah.
Well, we know it means devil, though the people with it don't know that yet.
Mm.
Well, Law was told it, but then he was told it doesn't mean that. But clearly, Sengoku. And I do like the fact that Sengoku was clearly a lot better at being in that job than Sasazuki is. Because whenever we see him, he just feels incredibly annoyed that he just can't kill all pirates.
He's just so stressed out. I thought this was going to be cool, but it's all such paperwork and meetings and God, no.
It's all about maintaining a balance of lawlessness, not actually just going in and stopping the crime. Yeah. What the hell?
500 want me now about the stats and your phone price is way up this month. Like, as you keep sorting out, it's like, oh, dude, this sucks.
And we should probably talk, because it was in Shonen Jump. That cover, that poster for Stampede.
Oh shit, yeah.
That's some strange bedfellows. But it does get over like, oh, how big a threat is this guy if those guys are teaming up?
Yeah. What's fucking Boogie doing there?
He's one of the most important fucking guys. He's a big man around town.
He is.
Or at least he pretends to be in a big jacket.
He's got the most pirates. That's why he's there.
Yeah.
But no, I was quite excited before, but then I saw that post, like, okay, right, what is gonna get Luffy and Rob Lucci to team up? How bad
Rob Lucci, yeah, that's the...
They're very different worldviews, kind of, just put it mildly, right? Yeah.
Smoker and Boogie. But the most important thing is, the rest of the crew finally get to meet Boa Hancock.
Oh, fucking Sanji's gonna be pissed.
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Boy, he's going to be somebody like incense one. What the fuck do you want this guy for? What's wrong with me?
Unless they do the thing where they somehow never meet her throughout the entire film, which is also
funny. like they all leave through a door and Boa Hancock comes in another door. Yes. I'll be up for that, sure.
Yeah.
Ah, yeah. Looking forward to that. Now, finally, because all the other Toei stuff wasn't airing this week, it's Gigage no Kitaro, episode 60, The Pitch Black Coldness, The Yokai Buru Buru, in which we're back with those two awful brothers.
God, every time, these fucking boys.
I feel like, not a slap, I'm not saying corporal punishment, but you should inform them, like, no, specifically what you're doing is bullying. You are little shits. Stop shouting in the fucking car, or I will turn this motherfucker right around.
Also, what the hell, like, scroll is pretty cursed, because picture of a ghost in that. Better throw it in the fire. This fire will probably sort it out. It's like, no, why would you ever think
he's,
that?
He's going to get logwood, and he picks up a scroll, he's like, oh, I guess we could put this in the fire. And the other kid's like, wow, check out this cool ancient scroll. And the other kid's like, lame. What is wrong with you? You both suck.
experience. How many times have you been kidnapped or transmodified by yokai activity? I thought this time,
I wouldn't even go to the fucking woods. That's where they fucking live.
I was going to say, you know, the little kids, whose name I forgot, he's got the right idea. He should be terrified.
He should be terrified. Yokai are everywhere. His granny told him about him, and fucking Daddy Eyeball goes like, oh yeah, your granny's fucking smart. She knows her shit. The world is terrifying and will murder you. From a ghost that's apparently just a practical jokester, but, you know, causes people to crash late at night.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not great.
I do like that we got some of Manna's dad, because don't get too much of him, and we learn that he's
kind of a joke, all right.
Absolutely mad for camping.
They drew him a bit younger this time as well,
yes,
than what he's looked before.
I think they stuck the chin beard on, but it just makes him look like a teenager rather than an older dude.
I don't know. Well, maybe it's because he's out in the country, he feels like more in tune with the world. He's re-energized.
My favorite thing, though, is it has, just like we've had the body horror out of the comics, we now get the gadget, which is pulled out of, never mentioned previously.
Yeah, put on the yoga glasses so you can see them. It's like, the what?
Sunglasses at night, yeah. That's what it is.
It's cool, is what it is. And also, fucking Ratman's got a pair. What the hell? Where did these things come from?
What was he, why was he freeing her? Did we ever get an answer?
I don't know, but I thought I'd probably some kind of make some money out of this somehow.
Yeah, sell ice cubes, I would say.
Yeah, like he was saying, it's like, hey, I thought we had a deal. And then
Step
he freezes
C,
him. We don't see what the deal was. It's like, oh, maybe I can make some, like, I'll free you if you give me like a fiver or something.
Yeah. He's just there to establish that she can possess you by going into your body and freezing you to death. But she flees his body because it's so stinky.
This felt say them again. This disgusting lifestyle and otherwise repellent nature. Something can save his skin.
He's great though. It won't be the same show without him.
No.
Well, I mean, like, we wouldn't have half the fucking trouble that they have to deal with if it wasn't for him.
Yeah, but then it wouldn't be,
they already had this yokai fucking sorted out that they were just gonna go back and check on later until he fucking messed it up some more, so yeah.
But yeah, the little kid who I've done the misfortune of not remembering his name learns how to be brave.
Learns how to be brave. He kind of does the Masaru thing of like standing up to the fucking, the thing you fear.
Yeah. Kizaru says, yeah, I fight you a lot of time, but I still got a bit scared. I was a bit concerned about stuff, but you just, gotta keep pushing on and no, otherwise you won't solve anything.
Of course I'm scared, kid. You ever had your body melted? Fucking sucks.
Just a few episodes ago, I was like chopped up into fish cakes by a fucking mad fish cake salesman yokai.
Still not 100% how I was put back together as a sexy lady, but I'm not going to fucking question it.
next week, it's the batteries again. The idol group they occasionally mention.
They keep bringing back these characters where I'm like, oh yeah, that fucking YouTuber, I forgot he was in this. Or, oh yeah, that battery-based band. I forgot about those guys. Like, they're like main characters or something. It's like, oh brilliant, the return of beloved battery characters.
Well, I did like the preview was Kitaro not remembering who they were and having to get his dad to remind him.
His dad's up on the idol groups, as well as your guy.
Yeah. Oh, what's the, who's that yokai? The one with the straw hat and the sticky out tongue?
Oh, Tofu something, because he's a yokai about tofu, loves tofu.
That's his thing.
Tofu Maru. Something like that.
Yeah, wasn't he getting ready to join the yokai hate mob?
Those, like, those fucking human tops accosted him in the street with baseball bats and stuff, so that's going to color your perception.
I'm not sure what evil tofu vengeance he planned, but
by the looks of things, it's not evil. It just seems to be like a terrible mistake. As could often be the cases.
Like, I like the look of this episode, though. The kind of scratchy thing they do in the shadows to make it more horror.
Yeah, and the way the yokai glasses are shaded. Pun intended.
Yeah. Then as well, you get the, predator, thermal imaging vision, even though it's hard to find an ice ghost with thermal imaging, but it's kind of,
it's the coldest spot. That's how you do it. Yeah.
Yeah. I believe that is everything we watched this week.
Just for my sins, you know, just to kind of say, look, as well, I was watching Attack on Titan. They got to the basement. Inside the basement is a flashback. And in that flashback is some incoherent thoughts about the Holocaust, which I will not go into at this juncture.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm just not going back to that show ever, so I'm good.
Yeah. Besides that, I watched the first of the second season of Doctor of Kakigururi, or Compulsive Gambler or Gambling Crazy, up on Netflix there. This episode just kind of started to be introduced to these crazies, because the Tsuruk has a president that has dissolved student council and is kind of holding elections and has drafted in her extended family, who all probably some kind of variety of gambling weirdo, probably going to engage in more gambling to decide who's going to be a new president of the student council. Then one of these guys just like does a gamble with Yumiko and Ishmi, something like this. It's the girl who has one eye and loves Russian roulette and equally as crazy about gambling as Yumiko is, and gets them into a whole thing with some contraption where there's you put your fingers into this box and there's a guillotine blade. And the blade is attached to one of these 20 strings that are on it, and you gotta cut the strings one by one and hope that one you set out doesn't cut your finger off. This the little kind of weird Gata Dolita insect loving girl thinks that she's got it all figured out. This thing doesn't even cut your fingers off at all. It's an iron plate in the middle of it, and it's just like I just love watching people squirm as they cut their strings and then think to go get their hand chopped off, their finger chopped off rather. And like, oh yes. But seemingly, when they're out of the room, so setting it back up again, Yumiko said, Madam Judge, did you ever remove the thing as I asked? And it's like, yes, I did, and see, and make sure it's a fair gamble. And he's like, wait, what? What's going on? This is, oh gosh. And she can't handle it when those kind which string will I cut next? Oh, man, I'm getting real turned on by this. Ka-chink! Oh, it didn't go off that time either. It's your turn. So these guys think, oh, if we're like the craziest gamblers ever, we're going to kind of steamroll all of these guys who've given the student council trouble. It's like, oh no, these are maniacs on a whole level that we're not used to.
Okay.
So it was good. It was a nice reintroduction to the characters and the whole atmosphere of the thing. And, I'm already hooked back on it again. So that'd be my probably, go-to watch on the commute and things, because it's an epic thing you can just watch on the go. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good stuff. And it's nice to see that back.
I did look into that After School Dice Club anime that's starting, I assume, in October. The cute girls play board games comic that's getting an anime. I looked at some of the comic. It's not just the cute girls. That's the good news is there's
like... Well, I figured the board games is why you're interested.
Yes, that is the... But there's other characters beyond them. Like,
oh, I see. Yeah, right.
But I need the story, but there's like an arc where two old men get into a fight about chess and shogi, and they have to bring them together by giving them a board game that they can both appreciate. And then there's an arc where they're all playing werewolf, but it like draws them, and the other people are playing like in the style of the characters they're playing in werewolf.
Okay.
And then the shop owner has a flashback to how he first learned about modern board games through Catan when he was in the army. So he is very much Lemmy Ubi-Bozo from City Hunter, just as he did. But with board games.
For that alone, I might get that look.
And someone on Board Game Geek has made a geek list of the games played in the comic and which chapters they appear in. So
how they're doing it wrong.
So you got Marrakesh, Cockroach Poker, Viva Topo. Because this is the thing in the comic, as far as I can see, is they slowly get more complicated games as they go through. So he's trying to.
Explaining each rule system and everything.
Yeah, and he goes into the rules a lot. It's like in Beat the Buzzard, one of the characters is like, ha ha ha, I know the way to win. I know this secret, I know this technique. I know the odds of all the cards appearing. but then because somebody plays exactly the same way she does, they both of them lose.
So, right. Yeah.
It kind of only works if, you're the only one attempting that tactic. Werewolves of Miller's Hollow, which I assume is the werewolf variation they're playing. Geister, that's the game they pull out for the Shogun chess people. Ink and Gold, then Catan, and then, apparently the next chapter that I haven't looked at. Telestrations, won me another night. I played Catan as well, but, like long after playing Catan is a thing to do. You got Fauna, Six Nymphs, King of Tokyo.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that.
Goiter, I don't know that. Dobble. Oh, no, Spot It, sorry. It's yeah. Oh, they're the same thing. Battle Line, that is the other version. You've played that with me. What's it called? The one with the German name for Scottish people.
Schottentotten?
Schottentotten, yeah. Schottentotten.
I'm probably pronouncing just it with a different thing. Horribly, yes.
That one's good, yeah.
Love Letter. Monjiro. Survive, Escape from Atlantis. Celtis, Pit, Onirim, I think. I think that's a solo game, if I remember correctly.
Elfenland. I've played that many board games, and I've played a bunch of those. That's crazy.
Red Light, Green Light. Pandemic. Of course they got it.
Of course they have. Multi-volume arc.
That's an all-nighter, yeah, yeah.
Acquire. Blockus. It's been really a long time. Ladies and Gentlemen, Barbarossa, Carcassonne, Puerto Rico, Dancing Dragons, Toddles Bobbles, Picamo, that's definitely in the trailer. Famiglia, Quarto, Chow Chow, Magic Labyrinth, Saboteur, Legends of Andor, Codenames, Dixit, Forbidden Desert, Celestia, Patchwork, Karuba, Agricola, Quirkle, Hey That's My Fish, Zitanix, Doodly-Doo, I guess it's probably how you're supposed to pronounce it, Kyanak, Liar's Dice, Niagara,
I love Liar's Dice,
Barony, Black Stories, Carom, Best Friends, Legend of the Wendigo, Looping Louie, Backgammon, Labyrinth, they go to an escape room, of course, and Ubongo. I wonder whether they'll alter some of the games to make sure they're ones which are in print.
I was going to say, what about like things that are in print, also like copyright? Are they going to have to skip over stuff?
Well, if you look at the trailer, they've clearly cleared a lot of copyrights.
All the games on the shelves
are what you can go and buy today.
So. Yeah. In comparison, maybe with High Score Girl, it would be a little bit easier to get the rights to show the game from the board game companies up front than it would be negotiated with a video game company, say.
Yes.
I mean, like, it's probably pretty good advertising, since it's going to go through the rules, tell you how a game might go, animate people having a lot of fun playing it.
It's also not something that, I thought of an animation either, compared to, we'll say, like, you know, having to watch, also, it's funny, watching, like, video games and things and stuff. But with the board game stuff, it feels like it all moves at a fairly staid pace, and just by reading it through in a comic, you can kind of figure it out. I mean, it explains why the kind of chess and shogi and gambling comics are so popular as well, because you can kind of follow the game along at your own pace.
Yeah.
And you also get to go inside the players' heads.
Yeah.
Their strategies, or they're reacting to strategies.
Play styles and things. It's definitely focused on the activity rather than the characters.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah. So it'd be interesting to check out in October. Righty-ho. That is everything. Oh, me and Niall went to the British Museum for a giant manga exhibition. I suppose we could talk about that.
It's pretty good. No need to be getting your pennies in a bunch online about it. Just because some guy shut his mouth off in a newspaper article.
Yeah. And I'm not sure, I wouldn't necessarily say all his points are entirely invalid either. Because I thought it was fine. it's a little too, because I think if you go in, if you don't know much about manga, you're probably not listening to this podcast. But if you don't know much about it, it probably works better than if you've got a degree of knowledge, because it's so broad, your mind will go, well, where's this then? If you're being
it's
this
very
broad.
Introductory, yeah.
Yeah. I will give him credit for not just, well, then lingering on Tezuka for ages. They give him a good bit at the start of it, and then they kind of move on past it to other ways and other places.
Okay.
They didn't say, oh yeah, Tezuka is best, we're going to fill like a whole third of the show for them. No, they give him like a little bit, give him his due at like towards the beginning, and then
sure.
You know, other people who've innovated this field as well, let's give them a little look too. That being said, some, you know, they're never going to be truly happy with like some, with choice of creation, so you can't get everybody, but there were some quite notable omissions there nonetheless, I think, who've been pretty pivotal in how the Afro was shaped.
Yeah, I'd almost say, if you're interested, you're probably, if you're interested in going, if you go, you're going to buy in the catalog anyway. So it's almost worth buying the catalog first to get your expectations at the right level. Mm. So, cause then you'll know, cause it's like, we were like going, where's the Go to Guy still? Where's the Go to, oh, there's no Go to Guy still.
Yeah.
But there is stuff in there where, yeah, say, particularly the, what's his name? Tetsuya Chiba?
Yes.
Yeah, there's like key pages from, Ashton Ojo are there. At least two key pages.
Yeah, like I know what the ending bit is. I know what it is. For someone who has seen this, I say in the exhibition, when it's from, they're going to get to the end of the comic, they search the page and say, "Ah, oh, shit, that was the ending." They showed me in the fucking exhibit. Damn it.
Well, I mean, like it might be past the statute of limitations for spoilers.
Oh yeah, yeah, stage. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And if you're interested in Fujio Akatsuka has been primed by Osamatsu and the Genius Backerbon, well, you are in luck, because there is a lot of that stuff there.
Yeah. A lot
of Backerbon stuff.
A lot of Backerbon. Lots of Eel Dog. I love the Eel Dog in there.
Yes. Yes, because you're like me, you'll come in and go, oh, look at all this merchandise, and then look at the price and go, oh, not buying any of that, apart from a magnet.
Well, the catalog's pretty good.
Yes, the catalog's worth getting.
Yeah, besides, like, things that are in the exhibition, there's a lot of supplementary material, like interviews and articles and such, nice contributions.
Okay.
It's a nice weighty volume, so it'll keep you, like, occupied for a little while it's on your coffee table and whatnot. Be good.
Yeah, I'm trying to think who else is, if you're a fan of, is definitely worth going. Takehiko and Noe. Because there's three new pieces from him in there.
Keiko Takamiya is on the rollout as well. And she's also like a part of some manga researcher study group as well. So she's also contributing like her comments and research to the exhibition too.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's something that Inoue Arts is, just, as we were kind of remarking, it's just disgustingly good. When I saw the same image in the catalog, I thought, this is like, it looks far better in person than it does, like, printed in the book where it's supposed to be. It's, like, it's fucking crazy. Oh, man, it's stupid good.
Yeah, it's just, some of the later stuff is weird, like having it as original art when clearly the art was done on a computer in the first place. I think right. It was the Kamui stuff was, like, the most obviously, digital. Yeah.
Because you're trying to you gotta look around it and kind of glance around and see how it like catches it and see what the brush stroke or the thumbprint or something like that anywhere. But no, like Kamui was clean with by this boy, it's on digital. But nonetheless, it's still very impressive draftsmanship.
Yes.
I mean, like, that's probably why they were using the Kamui stuff for the advertising as well, because it's the cleanest.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, there's a fair amount of Captain Tsubasa in there as well.
There's a, like, kind of, they get on this whole thing with Yuki Chan in Wonderland, and has a sort of, Alice in Wonderland, like, thread running through it as well.
That's because they wanted to, they're using that rabbit out of that particular comic as the guide through, and that, I think that was their way of, like, well, people who normally come to the British Museum are the sort of people who are very familiar with Alice in Wonderland, so we'll use that to trick them to get coming in here.
Lead them down a rabbit hole, if you will.
Yes. And also okay. We can offload a load of excess Alice in Wonderland merchandise in the gift shop.
I think that was a happy coincidence, certainly.
There's just one weird thing, because there's a banner for One Punch Man, and there's no One Punch Man art. And there's One Punch Man merchandise in the gift shop, which makes me think they were supposed to have some One Punch Man stuff.
Something went wrong.
And it's not there. And there's like a few, the layout has got a few bottlenecks with videos. It's like really annoying. You go in and there's a video almost immediately, so everyone, you get in and you're like stuck in a whole bunch of people straight away. Yeah.
Also, I check behind the walls, but they have hidden stuff behind there as well. And you might come, I might do, like, miss Aquinas looking bit of artwork that's just hanging by itself in one of the shadier areas behind one of those walls.
Jeez. Okay.
There is a giant Yami painted on the wall, so that's another good.
Quite a nice, like, running wall scroll of various, I guess, yokai or demons in there as well. They got a big attack on Titan Head in there as well. The booth.
Hmm.
Want to pause instead of anything?
One page of Conan.
Oh.
From the first volume. And then there's like some cases they clearly couldn't get the art, so they just were like examples of the comics in print.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to see the book as well, especially we've been used to seeing them in the shops in a certain way, of a certain size anyway, and to see some of them in little kind of either blown up. Big, or they've got the pocket-sized ones.
Yeah, they've got like a big library area as well. So if you wanted to, because we overheard somebody say she'd been in there 3 hours already. I think we were in there two, just looking at stuff. So if you wanted to go berserk and just sit down and read a bunch of stuff, you could probably spend all day in there.
Yeah, it's fun to try to thumb to one of the maybe lesser known or like lesser heard of manga anthologies in there and see what weird comics are in there about golfing or fucking brewing your own beer at home or some kind of monarchy like that, you know. Those fun little things that we never otherwise see. But, you know, in this modern Mega Mario where they license a lot of, like, straight titles, who knows? We could be looking at the next hit, the Grace bookshops in your hands right there. Or maybe not, who knows. But still a fun little thing. And, I was just happy that they actually had the physical things in there, because you can't just display this thing about a printed medium, and I have examples there for you to kind of like mess around with. And there was loads of it there. And between near Japanese volumes and also like English volumes, and you could put you could purchase in the gift shop probably for a just markup. But if you know like a good bookshop in town, or you know, access to a computer, you can just get them in from an online bookshop either.
Sure.
Hit down some names. Get some academic recommendations. It's a fun.
Yeah, it's a long time since I've been in a museum gift shop. It was a harsh lesson for me getting in there.
That's where they make the money.
It was just like if everything was just slightly too expensive rather than how expensive it was.
Extortionately,
like,
too.
Yeah, everything was like a little bit cheaper. I could have spent 70 quid in there, but I spent 3 plus the 30 quid of the catalogue, which I was going to get anyway, regardless.
Yeah. Postcards weren't bad.
The t-shirts they'd printed, they were 20 quid. They weren't too bad. The cheese sweet home stuff, I think, was the most expensive stuff. Cause it was like, you could get a cuddly chi for £45.
But it's a cuddly chi.
I'm sure.
You want one of those, just drop me a line next time I go to a convention and get one of those at you in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And they'll still be over chat. It was like, as I was going around, I was like, this makes, certain people who do shops, I was about to name names, but yes, certain people who show up at UK conventions, prices seem reasonable.
Yeah, I guess the idea is like that it's there. There's like, ooh, now that I have it in my hand, I want to have it right now.
Yeah. And there was,
which is the same idea with the conventions.
And there was some stuff which was unique, like some of the t-shirt, like the Cowboy t-shirt, which you see on all the posters.
Mm-hmm.
And they got a Captain Tsubasa one. And they look like, I think that gift box for the Fuji Akatsuki thing was made for, because I think it said like translated strips. But it was just 60, it was 60 quid for a box with two small booklets, almost booklets rather than books, stickers, and a hand towel. I was like, 50 quid, I might have popped for it. 60 somehow would take it over a limit for me.
Yeah.
I wonder how much that as well was a Japanese license holder saying, oh yes, this will definitely sell for that price.
Yes, that, through experience, that is also a possibility. Because that was the case with Dragon Gate Wrestling. The first time they came over, didn't sell t-shirts. Second time they came over, the t-shirts were a lot cheaper and they
were very sorry.
Yes. They all sold. Rightio, that really is it this week. We'll be back next week for The Requiem Quietly Plays Part 2. And in the meantime, check out our regular podcasts at secretofthesailormadness.com and dynamiteinthebrain.com. Goodbye!
Bye!
Yahoo!